Thanks for joining us in the trenches with Dave Lappin, brought to you by First Star Logistics. And very interesting one right here. We have the co-authors of From Bulldog to Bengal, basically the Joe Burrow story. Co-writers Dr. Scott Burson, who's a professor of philosophical theology at Indiana Wesleyan University, and Sam Smathers, youth football coach for Joe Burrow for quite a few years. And they got all kinds of stories to tell about Joe Burrow and who they talked to, what they had to say, how they wrote the book. All these questions are going to be answered, and it is a good book. It's worth the read. They did a great job. Can't get enough information on Joe Burrow. You're going to get a lot more listening to this podcast. Thanks for joining us in the trenches with Dave Lappin, brought to you by First Star Logistics, as always, coming to you from our outstanding studios. And we have got a couple of outstanding guests today. Everybody wants to know everything there is to know about number 9, Joe Burrow, with the Cincinnati Bengals. And our two guests today know everything there is to know about number 9, Joe Burrow, or Joe Shady, or Joe Shiesty. Dr. Scott Burson and Sam Smathers have combined, collaborated on an unbelievable book, From Bulldog to Bengal, talking about Joe Burrow and his football exploits and other things about Joe Burrow. First of all, gentlemen, welcome, and we thank you very much for spending time with us today.
Thanks for having us, Dave. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, looking forward to the convo.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. Okay, so Scott, I want to make this right now. You're Dr. Scott Burson, and you're the professor of philosophical theology at Indiana Wesleyan University, and you've written 4 books. Is this the 4th, or is this going to be the 5th?
No, this is the 4th.
It's the 4th.
Yeah, and I do have a background in sports writing. I managed a sports publishing company, Dave. I don't know if you remember Host Communications down in Lexington, sure. Kentucky. I was a managing editor there. Okay. And then I worked at the University of Florida in their sports information office. But for the last 20 years, I've been at Indiana Wesleyan.
Interesting. A doctor. Got the doctorate. That's much respect there, I can tell you that. Coach Sam Smathers, how many years have you coached? Did you coach youth football up in Athens, Ohio, sir?
In the Plains, Ohio? Yes.
Plains, I'm sorry.
That's all right. It's I coached 15 solid years and ran the league for 3 more, so about 18 years total.
18 years.
And ran the youth football league here and up until COVID. I mean, right up till, you know, COVID, basically. The meetings were still held right here in this garage, and, you know, the league meetings for all the teams. We had 10 teams at one point. Basically the Tri-Valley Conference, the teams in our high school and our conference, we had their youth programs in the same youth league. So we – these kids start playing against each other at 3rd and 4th grade and play all the way through high school. So, yeah. I was involved right up till COVID hit and the pandemic, and then, you know, everything stopped.
So not only is the book of beautiful word, but also beautiful pictures. And tell us about the pictures right behind you there, sir. What's going on with that big wall of pictures?
My daughter Trisha, who's the chief photographer of our book, Scott asked her to, you know, I think she inundated him with photos. And so anyway, she took all these pictures, and, you know, she's been taking pictures since she was in high school, and she was on the sidelines for every home game and about every road game. And of course, all the way through Joey's run and all the way to the state title at the Shoe. So when it's first started out, I'd look through her pictures, you know, on the digital, and I'd say, I'd like this. I want this. So kids that I coached in youth football, I'd pick out a few pictures and I'd post it on my wall, literally post it on my wall. But every year I would take down that picture and she'd have a new one and I'd have nowhere else to put it. As you can see, I would take pictures and put on top of other pictures and hang it back up for that year. We did that. I've done that ever since. And then, like I said, the last group I coached was a year after Joey came through. That's when I quit coaching youth football and started just running the league. So I kind of ran out of pictures. So those about the last ones on the wall is the year after Joey's group.
Well, Coach, I want to tip my cap to you because, you know, I played youth sports. You name a sport, I played it. You know, I just loved sports, football, basketball, baseball, put the shot through the discus, you know, whatever it was. Oh, yeah. And I can tell you that coaches like yourself from the youth age on have such a major impact on young men. And anybody that is part of the foundation of keeping young men on the straight and narrow and teach them the right way to do things, not just on the field, court, or whatever, but in the game of life, man, that's a special thing. And you're a special man. There's no question about it.
Well, thank you. I can't take all that credit, but that's one of the reasons I started coaching that. And my son was coming up. And so I always look back to my coaches, like, you know, you were talking about, and my offensive coordinator, Heath Bullock, his dad, Pat Bullock, was my first youth football coach. And that's where I got cut my teeth on football. And so I always thought back to how he did it. And, you know, of course, times are different back then, Dave, as you know, but you're right. I did a lot of influence on how I coach. My style, my philosophy was put on the guys that coached me. So yeah, you're right. Exactly right.
And Dr. Scott, congratulations to you for getting this all organized and written the way that it has been written. How long did it take you guys to collaborate? And I mean, boy, how many people did you interview to get everything that you got to tell the true story, the entire story of Joe Burrow?
Yeah, so again, as you said, I'm a university professor. So yes. one of the nice things about that is I have my summers off. I do a little online teaching, but this is when I do my writing.
Got it.
And so this was really a summer project mostly last summer. You know, Sam and I got together and thought we'd be a good team. My dad was the first city recreation director in Athens. And I grew up in Athens. I know Athens. I graduated from Athens High School. So he formally started youth football in Athens in 1964. He was the Athens City Recreation Director about 16 years. It went away for a while. There was some concern over head injuries. Sam helped bring it back. He helped spearhead bring it back. So I thought that was an interesting part of the story, too, that we have that connection to youth tackle football in Athens. But I interviewed about 60 people in Athens. And wow. This book is very much giving voice to the people of Athens County and trying to understand the Joe Burrow story through their eyes.
So what was the inspiration to collaborate, you know, on Joe's story? What was the inspiration between you two guys? How did you two guys hook up?
Dave, I started out originally thinking this might be a book about seven or eight prominent Athens High School graduates. So you know, Joe Burrow in the sports lane, there's a woman by the name of Maya Lin, who's a world-renowned architect who, as an undergraduate at Yale University, designed the Vietnam Vet War Memorial in Washington, D.C. Atul Gawande is a very well-known surgeon, New York Times bestselling author. He's in the Biden administration. Bill Greer has had an amazing career. He played football at Northwestern, but he's had an amazing career in the rock and roll business where he was the manager for Ozzy Osbourne. So you had all these different lanes. And I started this book kind of with that vision. But then when I started interviewing people and I talked to Sam, I talked to Jimmy Burrow, you know, I thought, man, I got so much information here. We could do a whole book on Joe Burrow. And that's what we decided to do.
Boy, that's incredible. And I guess you could write probably multiple books on Joe Burrow. I guess, Sam, the big question that I had is, I mean, you were first introduced to Joe Burrow third grade, right? It was third grade team?
Yep, correct.
Okay. When did you have an idea? I mean, at the third grade level, it's tough to really kind of separate guys and all that sort of thing. But I mean, you can see some traits, you can see some characteristics and that sort of thing. But when did you realize, when did you think, man, this kid could be something special now? I mean, I don't know if you could have envisioned he was going to be, you know, what he is in the National Football League. Heisman Trophy winner at the collegiate level. I mean, that's incredible. But did he show signs right away of being unique and special?
Like I said, I coached for many years youth football, and I'd seen a lot of kids come through, a lot of talent. And, I mean, we had some good talent. Like I said, we had, you know, a couple, one boy went to the Naval Academy, you know, that played in youth football. And so, I mean, we had some good talent. His fourth grade year, really, third grade year, the way he memorized the plays and the way he caught on to stuff like that. I mean, the way he just picked up on the wing tee offense, which is what our high school was running. And let me back up. I mean, I had six different or seven different varsity coaches since I was my 10 year of youth football. So in those years that I coached youth football, we went through the high school level of six or seven different varsity coaches. So I would go to each one of them and ask them what they're running, so we can get the terminology in place at this level and bring it all the way through. Right. And so that's just particular to me, wing tee offense, you know, is what we were running. I loved it. I thought it was great. And I'm Woody Hayes. And, you know, three things happen when you throw the football. Two of them are bad, so the odds are against you. You know, so we're running the wing tee and all that stuff. And Joey picked up on that, and his insight to, you know, I mean, you can call it football IQ at third grade. But, and then, like I said, I didn't know who his dad was, and, you know, till, you know, halfway through the season, and didn't know where his background was. But I knew he's, you know, very athletic and all that stuff. But by the time he's in sixth grade, I told my son, who just graduated from Athens, I said, he was my O-line coach. I said, I need somebody that can shotgun snap. He's going, what? He said, we're in fifth grade. I said, I'm telling you, we're going to do this. And we had the Lerman twins, who were tall. I had to show the birth certificate every game, you know, because they're too old. And so anyway, and Joe could throw the ball, and I told him, I said, if you're going to throw it high and outside on the sidelines, so where only they could reach it. And we got into this, and we found a kid that could shotgun snap, and about the whole sixth grade year, we ran spread, wide double slots, you know. And then I knew we needed somebody special at the high school level to coach these boys. If they stayed together, I knew they'd be great in high school. Yeah. In high school.
Yeah, it's interesting. After the Super Bowl in the off season, in a presser, I said to Joe, what are you guys going to do? I mean, how are you going to tweak the offense? And he looked at me and started smiling. He goes, we're going to put in the wing tee, you know? And I'm like, the wing tee, where'd that come from? And then I have a better understanding now of why he was using the wing tee as what he was going to install instead for the offense for the upcoming season. I mean, his football IQ, he is a football savant. It is unbelievable how quickly he sees things, processes things properly, and, you know, makes the right decision a high percentage of the time, about as high as I've ever seen, really.
I totally agree. And like I said, when he didn't get his opportunity, we went to every spring game at Ohio State and watched all those. And I'm like, you know, he'll get his chance. And he broke his hand and all that stuff happened. And
right.
Graduated, you know, in Ohio State and went to LSU and, you know, thank goodness for that. And, you know, he got a new opportunity and the stars aligned, as we always say. And so he got that opportunity and everybody got to see it. And the competitiveness in him, that going to a school that was a running school, and him, everybody seen it. And that's when everybody knew. I mean, that's when everybody knew how great, you know, Joey could be. And of course, his senior year, probably the greatest, you know, college football season ever, you know, in my opinion. But, you know,
No doubt. And so I guess you're at the Dog Pound. Tell us about the Dog Pound. And what was the Dog Pound like when the national championship game was being played? What was the Dog Pound like when the Bengals were in the Super Bowl and playoff games leading up to the Super Bowl with the hometown hero at the helm?
It was when he went to LSU, it was every weekend we were you know, we'd have the laptop hooked up to the TV trying to get an SEC network, and you know, you get on there and say, all right, I'm going to try this for a month trial so we can get that game type thing. And we're hooking it up. We got everybody here. We're smoking something on the smoker. We got something on the grill. You know, we're having, you know, 10 or 15, 20 people here. We're all watching the games. And, you know, and then a buddy of mine, Steve Shockley, he's from LSU. And he hooked us up with the whole setup, two fresh bags of crawfish.
There you go.
And the sausage and the big red shrimp, the corn, I mean, everything. He came here and we had a crawfish bowl for the Natty game. And so, yeah, it's always every week. And now Matt stopped by yesterday. Matt Frazee, he's in the book. He's the voice of the Bulldogs here on the radio.
Right.
He stopped by yesterday, Scott, and dropped off some bratwurst. He said, hey, we ain't had bratwurst in a while. So this Saturday or Sunday, we're going to do bratwurst for something. I don't know what we're going to watch, but, you know, whatever it is, we're going to do bratwurst.
So Scott, how difficult was it to, I mean, you talked to through the eyes of the, of Joe Burrow's hometown, mm-hmm. and there's got to be so many stories. Like you said, when you initially thought, oh, this could be, you know, a book about a few people. Well, there was mm-hmm. so much material. Mm-hmm. It ended up being about Joe Burrow. How did you select and how did you edit it? What hit the floor and what made the book? How did you come to those kind of decisions?
Yeah, it's interesting. I fairly early on, you know, had an outline in my mind. I mean, this story almost writes itself. I mean, it's like a Hollywood story. You take the script to Hollywood and they say, this could never happen, but it's happened, right? Yeah. And so the outline was there, and I would talk to one person, and then that person would say, you should talk to that person, and that would lead to more stories. And this is one way in which Sam was incredibly helpful, is he hooked me up with lots of different people, and you can tell by just talking to him for 15 minutes what a great storyteller he is.
No doubt.
You know, so I knew from the first hour I was talking to him that we had great rapport and great chemistry, and we would work together as a team, but it's just one story led to another. You know, and then it's just like a puzzle. You start putting the puzzle pieces together for each chapter. And I think we got a lot of great anecdotes and stories in the book.
So what, I guess, give us like one or two of the more unusual stories that that you guys unearthed and uncovered as you were going through this process.
Well, I'll give one, and then Sam, maybe you can give one.
Okay.
But Sam coached football, but Joe and his buddies were three sport athletes. Yep. like I'm sure you were, Dave, like you were saying before, a lot of us growing up in that era, I mean, you just go from one sport to another, and that's what Joe and the Lorman twins and a few others did. But they played basketball, they played baseball, you know, during those seasons, and they were very good at every sport.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some people in the community that thought Joe was basketball was his best sport. Mm-hmm. And then others would weigh in and say, no, it's baseball is going to be his best sport. Right. So, I mean, he could have gone in three different directions, you know, if he put his mind to it, but right. playing baseball one time, they rarely lost a tournament, but they were playing in a tournament, and they got homered big time.
Yeah.
They all were convinced. I mean, like Sam Vanderven, who, you know him, Sam. He played with Joe in high school and played all these sports. Said that these balls and strikes calls were not like an inch off the plate. They were like a foot off the plate, right? That they were calling strike. So at any rate, they got homered. They got their second place trophy. One of the Lormans immediately threw it into the trash can in the dugout. The other one split it over his knee. Joe was silent. Joe was just stoic, and he went home. And later that night, Robin got on the phone with the baseball coach and said, I don't know if I should be proud of Joe or disturbed, but he's been sitting in his room dissecting that trophy piece by piece by piece for the last, you know, 2 hours. Then he tossed it in the trash can.
Oh.
And so I think that speaks to, you know, how competitive he is, you know, how much, you know, second place isn't good enough. And it's not about, I don't want, you know, the viewers to get the wrong impression. He's not a bad sport. These right. guys were not bad sports.
Oh, right.
You know, they wanted to win. They felt like it had been cheated, taken from them. But I think because it kind of indicates that Joe is a winner from the beginning and a championship athlete.
And it's so interesting, stoic in front of everybody, yeah. and on his own, takes that thing apart and throws it away. Joe is like, I've never seen a guy more composed and poised in any, I mean, the most unbelievably crazy environments. He has just got it together, man. He's amazing with his makeup that way. What about you, Coach? What comes to mind for you?
Oh, I'll go to the youth football days. And he's in sixth grade. We're getting ready to play Nelsonville up north, up 7 miles up the road, one of our rivals.
Yeah.
He's playing scout quarterback. And, you know, I hand him a script of plays and what they're doing. John Pugh's, you know, assistant coach over there. And we're running our defense to get ready for what they're running at us. And Joe looks at Coach Pugh and says, I can beat this defense. And sixth grader. So we run it. They run something. He's totally way off script. And I'm like, and he literally beats my defense. I mean, he you know, we were one of the best teams, you know, in the league, you know, so And he does about three or four times it goes by. I mean, you know, and I finally just get upset. I'm going, well, you just run the script. They can't do this. Nobody can do what you're doing. So don't try, you know, Nelson, they cannot do this. So I'm just telling you, run the script so we can get our defense ready. And he said, and Coach Pugh stepped right in and says, my bad, coach, and took the blame. And come to find out later after practice, it was Joey setting up and running whatever defense we put in front of him to where he could beat it with our backup, you know, our number two offense.
That's amazing. I mean, at that age, to be able to say, you know, hey, here's the weakness. I come to this formation, run this play, I'm going to beat it, you know, and it's pretty unusual. There are no two ways about that.
In sixth grade.
That's unbelievable. So, I mean, Jimmy, obviously, great player himself, coach, you know, legendary coach for a bunch of years, defense coordinator for a long time about how you both played defense on the defense side of the ball, as did Jimmy at Nebraska. I mean, Joe, my understanding is Joe was a hard-hitting defensive back that had some physicality to him.
Hey, Dave Lapham here to tell you about one of Cincinnati's fastest-growing companies, First Star Logistics. They're currently drafting freight brokers to join their sales team. Apply at firststarlogistics.com. First Star Logistics, opportunity
knocking. Oh, I mean, yeah, if you want me to take that, I'll jump right in. We're playing a playoff game right here, and I think the second year we're playing Logan Elm, I believe. Anyway, kid, he gets a hit on Joe, and you know, and Joe don't forget. He's like an elephant, and so he gets throws a pass, a little screen. He's lead blocking the guy that hit him. He de-cleats him and sets him on his butt, and didn't stand over him and do anything. Didn't do anything like that. He hit him. The kid knew who hit him. And it was like everybody in the stands was like, oh. And that was, you know, that was Joe. That's how competitive he is.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing about Joe in his career, I mean, a lot of great ones never face serious adversity and still are able to be great. But a lot of the great ones had to overcome some adversity. And Joe had to overcome some adversity with the broken hand, like you talked about earlier at Ohio State, and it not quite working out the way that everybody anticipated at Ohio State. But instead of, you know, getting his dauber down and, you know, giving into it, what did he do? You know, he goes to LSU and wins the Heisman Trophy and a national championship for his football team. I mean, that's like you know, that's responding to adversity in a big time way. I think that do you think that was maybe the big turning point going through what he went through at Ohio State and then, you know, hit that little down part of his career and then just rocketed straight up north? I mean, was it that simple?
No, go ahead, Sam. Go ahead.
Well, I don't know if it was that simple, but There was a practice at Ohio State. There you tug of war with a tire, and he's going against the linebacker. Joey wins that competition, you know. So he had it, you know. He knew what he wanted. He knew he wanted to show he was tough. When I think losing the state title game, which he'll tell you is still the worst loss in his life.
He does,
and none of us here in Athens or in the Plains or Athens, I've never watched that tape. I guarantee you, Joey and Jimmy's never watched that tape. That game right there, he broke, I don't know how many records in that game, still holds records in the state of Ohio for that game. Paul Keel said that was probably one of the best high school football games he'd ever watched at the time. And so that game right there, losing that game, he knew what that adversity, climbing that mountain, you know, I got to get over this. So I'm just saying a lot of these things combined, you know, and there we go again. Jimmy and I talk about this, the stars aligning, you know, things happening to make other things happen. And you know, the road we take, and he just has a no quit attitude, and he's not going to settle for second best. So that's Joey.
Yeah. And I would just add to that, Dave, I mean, the week, his Heisman Trophy week, when he went around the country and he collected the most hardware of anybody, probably in the history of college football.
Right.
I mean, in one of his speeches, he said, I wouldn't change a thing about my story. because I am where I am today because of what I went through. So the old adage, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, certainly applies to Joe Burrow. And I think he recognizes that. And because he's had those experiences, it's made him a great leader in the locker room. He can communicate with others in the locker room that are struggling with different things that might be, you know, in a trough at that moment. He can kind of explain, hey, I've been there before. And that's part of his emotional intelligence that makes him such a great leader.
I've spoken with Jimmy about this before, you know, being the dad of a star athlete and a guy who's interested in football, the sport that you're coaching. You know, as a dad, you have to kind of walk the line a little bit. It's like, I don't want to be, you know, a dominating dad that is, you know, is pushing football down my son's throat kind of thing. And Jimmy seemed to approach it like when Joe had questions, Joe would come to Jimmy and Jimmy would, you know, gladly take it and run with it with Joe. Was that the way that it looked to you, coach, when he didn't interfere with you coaching his son? He trusted and believed you had his son's best interests at heart. Was Jimmy a great parent in that regard?
Jimmy was, I mean, he was busy, of course, coaching, you know, OU, and he very seldom came to practice. You know, he was always gone or, you know, other, you know,
right.
So, but one practice he did come over. I mean, it was sixth grade year. We're about halfway through the year and he's going, and I'd make playbooks. I mean, I'm old school. I'd make playbooks for, you know, the offense, and my wife would print them up and we'd have all these playbooks and every week would change. And we had the wristband, you know, with the plays on the wristband.
Yeah.
And Jimmy came up to me one practice. He's going, you know, there's like 60 or 70 plays on there. I said, yeah, we have like 8-10 formations. And I said, there's about 60 plays that are on that wristband, not counting the ones that we don't have on there that he already just automatically knows. And Jimmy said, wow. And I said, but the funny thing is, Jimmy, I said, he knows every one, all of them do. And they're sponges. They want more. I said, I ain't smart enough to coach this kid to give him what he needs to be better. And he's going, yeah, you're doing a fine job. I said, well, I'm just, and he was worried about the number of plays. And I said, they know them all. They know every one of them. It's funny.
That's incredible. I mean, that they probably had, your play sheet probably had more plays than the high school playbook and a lot of college playbooks, you know? I mean,
well, we did. Because, well, like I said, I went through, you know, the power eye, the pro set, the Maryland eye, the wing tee, you know, and now we went to a spread. But we could use any combination of that from third grade year through sixth grade year. We could jump in and out of one and do a double handoff or jet motion and it's like it was flawless, you know, from one play to the next during the game.
So when did Joe hit his growth spurt as such? I mean, when did Joe really grow into, okay, now the body is starting to catch up to some of the mental capacity and now these abilities are really in sync? I mean, when did Joe start to become, wow, look at Joey B?
I mean, the one thing that Coach Adams did here when you was a freshman, especially that group, we had, like I said, 14 to, you know, by the time they were freshman year, freshmen didn't play varsity ball here. And right. And that was a tradition here. I don't know if it was when you was here, Scott, but we didn't have freshmen on the varsity team. You had one or two maybe that moved up, but the four-year varsity letterman at Athens is very rare. And they had their own freshman squad. They had their own schedule and they went everywhere. They went to Ironton. They went to Wheelersburg. They went, you know, they played all these big, you know, schools and never lost a game. And I think that year solidified that group. And that's when Joey hit his spurt. His sophomore year, when things, the stars aligned and Pete Germano got a job at Fresno State and took Michael, our starting quarterback, with him, that gave Joey the opportunity his freshman year. Now, his size was still, he was undersized, you know, but that's about when he hit his spurt. That's about when things happened with his body and he grew into it.
Hmm. Really interesting. You know, I mean, looking at Jimmy and Robin, you know, Jimmy being a coach, Robin being an educator, now she's a principal. I mean, that's a great dynamic for any young man, any young athlete to have parents like that to help you along the way and keep you on the straight and narrow and keep that discipline and all that. But man, to see that type of support system at home with the coaching staff and everything that went along with it, I'm sure Joe tells everybody how appreciative and fortunate he feels, does he?
Go ahead, Scott.
Well, no, I think, Sam, that's your question.
Well, it's – he still – when he stops in or texts or calls or when he comes back, I guarantee – I know this. I'm talking to the boys on that team and his friends. They don't talk football. We, you know, when he stops in here, we don't talk football. You know, we catch up on, you know, hey, how's it, you know, everything, how you doing, you know, how was the knee after the rehab, you know, is that good? But we don't get into X's and O's. We don't talk that type of stuff. We just talk, you know, friends and try to, you know, just catch up with each other. How's it going? But he's, you know, he came, his family, and I attribute a lot of everything he's done. His mom and dad were the greatest. Robin did everything volunteer. She was the best, you know, team mom type thing. My wife was the head of concessions. So anything she needed, Robin was there to help out, you know, just so she could watch her son play. So Jimmy would, he'd say, hey, I got film. I had one of my assistants on the roof of the Peden Stadium filming a game. Do you want a copy of that? And I said, yeah, I'll take it. Cause we always film it too. I mean, yeah, we were ate up with it. All right, Dave, we were ate up. We did film, and Mondays at practice, we'd bring the kids in the garage and we'd set them down in front of the TV and say, watch the tape from yesterday's game. Now, we didn't critique anybody. We just said, watch your position, watch what you did, and watch, you know, see what everybody's doing. And then when we were done, I said, all right, everybody, you know, we good with this? Yeah. Everybody see where they can get better? Yes. Is everybody happy? No. Because I didn't teach happy. You know, you can be happy, but you can't be satisfied type of thing. So, and so we, you know, and we got up Monday, and that Tuesday we go back to practice. So, but Jimmy would bring film and say, hey, I got this tape from, I'm like, okay, thanks. But yeah, great, great parents and great people to, you know, Joey and his brothers, I'm sure they beat him around like a little football, and, you know, the age difference. So.
Yeah. Dave, if I could just add to that. Yeah. I mean, this book has all the gridiron glory. It's got all that good stuff. It tells the whole story, you know, from the time that Jimmy, you know, walked on at Ole Miss and then transferred to Nebraska. It tells that, but Joe all the way up. But for me, the one, if there was one word I would use to summarize this book, it's family. And it's not just Joe's family, but it's the family of Athens County that has helped Joe become who he is and has supported him through the years. And, you know, Joe got integrated into Athens through sports, and his teammates became his family. You know, his coaches became his family. The parents at those youth travel events were his family. And I think that translates into what you see in the Bengal locker room. I mean, these guys aren't just teammates, they're family members. And so I think that's the major theme, at least for me, for the book.
You're exactly right. I mean, the Bengals locker room is the, you know, the culture is the buzzword that everybody is trying to build the right culture, man. And to me, culture is at its strongest when it's policed and produced by the players themselves, you know, not from the top down, but internally. I mean, the player and Joe's a ringleader, man. I mean, Joe's big about that. And he's the first one to reach out to new teammates. And, and then you look at the family, Robin, Jimmy, and Joe, they started this, the Joe Burrow Foundation, and some proceeds from the book sales are going to be going to the Joe Burrow Foundation. So their mindset is, we're fortunate, we're going to give back. Talk about that a little bit, how good it is to be part of that type of thing.
Yeah. Sam?
Go right ahead. No, you jump in. I'll pick up where you left, where you got it all.
Yeah. No, this project, you know, when I kind of envisioned it, I wanted this to be very much giving to Athens County, Plains, all the areas around Athens County. That's my home region. I care very much about Athens. Right. There's nobody that cares more about Athens County than Joe Burrow and Jimmy and Robin. Right. I mean, they have given back so much. I mean, go to the Heisman speech. For those who don't know, you know, he spends 31 seconds talking about food insecurity in Athens County. Totally unsolicited. You know, there's various fundraisers that pop up that week. Within a week, there's $500,000 that are donated to the food bank. And the food bank in Athens County, the annual budget's only $70,000. I think to date, there's about $2 million, you know, that were, but they have started their own foundation now. not only for Southeast Ohio, but also for Cincinnati and Louisiana, perhaps even throughout the country. So Robin and Jimmy are spearheading that. You know, Joe's very much behind it. Joe's the president of the foundation. Robin and Jimmy are vice presidents of the foundation. Right. And so they just continue to give back. And, you know, when Joe made his entrance, you know, he wears his swag now from time to time, but he made his entrance not this past year, but the year before for the AFC Championship game. You know, he's wearing the Sherpa jacket. That's designed by a kid that he knew, you know, from Athens. One of his best friend's brothers, Micah Saltzman. He's wearing cleats, you know, the kids from Athens designed, you know, so he's always thinking about the 740. I mean, how can he give back? What would you add to that, Sam?
No, you nailed it. And, you know, the Joe Burrow Foundation, I thought, is the one thing that Robin and Jimmy and I talked about at a game. And I said, well, we're going to do something. And so, but to give back the mental health issues and the food insecurities of Baton Rouge area and the greater Cincinnati area and the Southeast Ohio area, that to me is, you know, then is a great, you know, it just tells about Joey. I mean, that's how he is. You know, it's just right there and it's right off his cuff, just like everything he does. It's right there. And people say, you know, I see it. A lot of people don't, but he wears his heart on his sleeve, but you don't see it type thing. And so that's Joey Burrow.
And I'll add one more thing related to that. Jeff Skinner, who I grew up playing basketball against, but Jeff was his high school basketball coach, Joey's high school basketball coach. And Jeff told me, he said, you know, we all love Joey Burrow and all that he's done for Southeast Ohio, but maybe the greatest thing that Joe Burrow has done for us, he's given us Robin and Jimmy, and we have a lifelong friendship with Robin and Jimmy. And that just tells you that whole family is just amazing. Everyone loves them.
It's an incredible story. It really is. And, you know, boy, I look at a guy, you know, like Joe Burrow, and he's special. But it takes a lot of special people, you know, supporting that to make him as special as he is. And all you guys, everybody's part of that. And Coach, I can just say that I know I've gone back to my high school coaches and youth coaches and thank them. You know, I was fortunate enough to be the only guy in my hometown to make it and play in an NFL team for an extended period of time. Joe Burrow seems to be in that situation, you know, as well. And you go back and you're very thankful, but I'm not the only one going back, you know, classmates and guys that I know that younger or older that have become successful doctors, lawyers, whatever, they all go back and thank the coaches too for giving them that foundation to be successful in whatever endeavor it's going to be. You know, I mean, sports teach you a lot about life. Sports are life. They're a slice of life. And man, Joe Burrow is such a great example of that. And Athens and the surrounding community is a great example of that. You guys are. It's a great story, man. It's a feel good story. And I encourage everybody to go out and get from Bulldog to Bengal, Joe Burrow. And it's written by Dr. Scott Burson, the professor, doctor. Emphasizing doctor, professor of philosophical theology, Indiana Wesleyan University. And of course, Sam Smathers, big influence on Joe Burrow's life. Not only coach, but human being, person. Gentlemen, can't thank you enough. Appreciate all the time that you gave us. And you know what? Good things happen to good people. And you two are good people. And there's a lot of good things going to happen with you guys in this book. No question about it.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
Dave Lapham here, and every day I am grateful for my experience to have played professional football. As a player, I realize self-motivation, leadership, and appreciating your teammates are key. At First Star Logistics, you can use those same attributes to create the life you want for you and your family. Build your future by working hard, like I did. You'll see results both on and off the field. Call First Star Logistics today and be part of our winning team. King.